All right, so I'm joined here on the line by Pontiac M&A Andre Fortin to talk about Bill 96, which just passed in the National Assembly today. Andre, how's it going?
Good. Good afternoon.
So I guess it's been a busy day for you today in the Assembly there. So can you talk a little bit about the process there and how Bill 96 got passed?
Yeah, so we've been Bill 96 was introduced about a year ago, maybe a little bit more than a year ago by Premier Legault and his government, and since then it's been studied at length. I think it's spent about 120, 130 hours in committee, clause by clause, with everybody looking into every detail of the bill. And over the last couple of weeks, we've been speaking of the bill in the Assembly itself, in the final stages of the bill. We've studied a few last-minute propositions, proposed changes by various parties, and today the bill passed. So there was a vote to record every M&A in favor, every M&A against, and the CAQ voted obviously in favor of its own bill. Quebec Solidaire voted in favor of the bill as well, and we voted against the bill alongside the Parti Québécois for very different reasons. On our part, because we think that the protection of the French language is a good thing, but it doesn't have to come at the expense of rights and services for minority communities. And for the Parti Québécois, they voted against it, obviously, because they think the bill doesn't go far enough. So it's an unfortunate result that the bill was adopted. It's a result that will have consequences on the rights of the English-speaking community, on rights of Francophones as well, on rights of newcomers to Quebec. And so today was an unfortunate ending to that debate that's been going on over the last year in the Assembly here.
So did the timing catch you off guard at all? I know it had been sort of foreseen that it would be probably this week, but was there any hope that there would be any chance for last-minute amendments or that sort of thing? Or?
Yeah, we were always, I think everybody was hoping, at least on our end, people were hoping that the government would at least hear some of the most recent calls, including the call by the College of Doctors this weekend to make some changes, because there's a lot of people worried about the healthcare services that they'll be able to get in the province. So, we were hopeful that they would hear that call from the College of Doctors. Unfortunately, government just said, well, no, we don't think it's going to have a great impact. The unfortunate truth of the matter is that there's a lot of gray zone in this bill. There's a lot of dispositions or parts of the bill that may lead to an impact on people's ability to access certain parts of the healthcare system. So that was the last change that everybody was hoping would get through to government, and unfortunately they chose to go ahead, use their majority, and adopt the bill.
Yeah, I've been reading a little bit about that. I believe it was the dean of McGill's Faculty of Law was talking there about some of the carving out a specific exemption for healthcare services. I understand in the bill there's a small mention of, I think it was like health and other services that wouldn't be affected by this, Section 15 or something along those lines. But what he was asking for was that there be a specific exemption spelled out in the bill that this wouldn't affect the rights to healthcare in English. So I guess what would you like to seen as far as a change in that regard?
Well, here's the thing. Government says the people who are Anglophones already have access to healthcare in English in Quebec. Sure, but it's not always easy. It works if you present yourself at a bilingual institution. It doesn't work so well if you present yourself at an institution that isn't necessarily bilingual, because they may want to offer you that service, but they may not have the staff on hand. They may not have the bilingual healthcare professionals to help you. And that's, in theory, they want as many healthcare professionals as possible. But it's never a bad thing to have people who can serve more people, serve Francophones and Anglophones in their primary language, because healthcare is something that you want to be able to understand everything. You want to be able to understand the diagnosis. You want to be able to understand the prescription. You want to be able to understand the directive, the condition you have. And struggling through a language barrier can make that more difficult. Now, the bill does have some parts that will lead to having less bilingual people in the public service in general and in the healthcare service. So the healthcare service, just like any other employer in Quebec, is now going to have to justify with the Ministry of the French Language every single bilingual hire that it makes. So if you post a job that is bilingual imperative, you'll have to justify that to government. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on the healthcare system to maybe not post bilingual jobs. And in turn, that's going to make bilingual hires more difficult. Another part that is in Bill 96 is the cap on enrollment for English cégeps. A lot of our nurses are trained by Anglophone cégeps, whether it's Heritage College or some of the Montreal colleges. Well, with an enrollment cap, it means that we may have less nurses that come from Anglophone cégeps that therefore can communicate adequately with people who are looking for services in English. So those are dispositions of Bill 96 that will have an impact on people's ability to have services in English when they look for those healthcare services. It's not just the doctor-patient relationship, but it's also that type of assurance that people who can communicate are in our hospitals and are available for patients who need it.
So it's not just, we were lucky enough to have a bilingual facility there, so it's not just necessarily the communicating with your family doctor or with a nurse in the ER or something along those lines, but it's more the long-term effects down the road of these hiring practices that require a demonstration of French being necessary, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's not just because you live in, say, Bryson or Shawville or Bristol or somewhere in the Pontiac and your local hospital is the Shawville Hospital, which is a bilingual institution, you may have to go to Gatineau, which is not a bilingual institution. You may have to go to some of the Montreal hospitals at some point if you have a more complicated situation. So by Gatineau not having access to as many nurses coming from, say, Heritage College, because government put an enrollment cap on Heritage College, well, you may have less nurses who are able to communicate with you in English. So yeah, it's not just the doctor-patient relationship that still has some gray zones, like the College of Doctors was saying, but it's also that long-term effect of will the healthcare network have bilingual staff available when it's needed by some Anglophone patients.
And just jumping off that, these hiring mandates there, as far as having to demonstrate that a job requires the English language, how do you see that playing out in, say, like a business in the Pontiac that would be affected, like, say, like Giant Tiger or Tigre Géant, I should say?
Well, I think it's going to depend a lot on the rigidity with which the Office Québécois de la Langue Française applies all of these regulations. So if Giant Tiger says, I need a new cashier and that position should be bilingual because I want to be able to serve the customer who shows up in both languages, well, that's one thing, and it would be normal because a good portion of the clientele that would pass through would be Anglophones and would be looking for that service in English. If the Office de la Langue Française says, yeah, well, you already have enough bilingual staff. Do you really need this last one to be bilingual, or can it be a French-only position? Then it's going to mean that, yeah, maybe some cashiers will have to switch around. Maybe you'll have to do some changes to your staffing policies, your work schedules. So it could make things a little bit more complicated for businesses. And really, we're talking about small businesses looking to hire people who can serve all of their clientele. I get why they would want bilingual staff. I think anybody in the Pontiac would get why they'd want bilingual staff. Will the Office de la Langue Française see it that way? That's what remains to be seen. So there's a lot hanging over our heads here with Bill 96.
And you mentioned there, it's a lot of it comes down to interpretation from the OQLF, or the language police, I guess, as they're more well known here in the Pontiac region. So, and another a big part of the bill was sort of an expansion of their powers, which hasn't gotten, I think, as much attention as it kind of deserves, because there is some very disturbing sort of precedents being set with in regards to their powers. So, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I heard an analysis from a constitutional lawyer in Montreal about this specific dispositions on the powers that the OQLF have and will have with Bill 96. So they will essentially have the power of searching and seizing computers from small businesses without a judge's mandate. So they could come in a business, and in order to see if you're a business of 25 employees or more, if you're communicating amongst staff in French, if the bosses are communicating with the employees in French, which is a new requirement for businesses between 25 and 50 employees, they could come into the business, search the computers, search the files, see if there's evidence of people not speaking French, and do this without a judge's mandate. Searching and seizing without a judge's mandate is something that a lot of the police forces don't even have in terms of their criminal investigations. So it's something that goes above and beyond what's normal, what's expected, what is acceptable for us. But government is doing this based on their indication or their new orientation that businesses between 25 and 50 people should always speak French on the premises. That, in my mind, will have an impact on the growth of certain businesses in the Pontiac. I already have had businesses tell me that, well, I'm at 20-some employees. Maybe I won't do that expansion project because it would put me over that 25-person limit. And I have to speak English. I have employees who speak nothing but English. I myself, as an employer, speak nothing but English. I haven't gotten those language skills yet. So it could lead to a lot of very frustrating interactions with the OQLF here in the region.
And is there any other expanded powers other than the search and seizures? There things regards to signs or those sort of things that have come up in the past?
Well, the OQLF has been, let's say, present in the region for a long time and has often been in the media for, identifying things that don't necessarily make a huge difference in terms of the impact on whether people speak French or not. So I think people here are well aware of the OQLF. What happens now is that they will have not only extra powers, they will also have extra money. I think the government voted $100 million for the OQLF in extra funding to apply these new regulations. So I expect now that Bill 96 has passed and that those regulations will come into effect, that a lot more inspectors will be on the ground ensuring that businesses, municipalities, community groups and others follow regulations.
And so just going off that, now that the bill has been adopted, what do you think is going to be the biggest change or the most obvious change to how people's day-to-day lives go now that it is a law? What's going to be affecting people the most here right off the bat?
I think the how government or how individuals can communicate to government. So you will now have to prove that you are quote-unquote, a historic Anglophone, historic Quebec Anglophone, in order to access government services. So when you, in theory, if you follow the letter of the bill, every time you call government, whether you want to talk to a Revenue Quebec agent, whether you want to talk to, you want to report an outage to Hydro-Quebec, whether you want to talk to the MAPAC because you want to apply to some grant as a local farmer, you will have to do that in French or prove that you are a historic Anglophone. So prove to them every time you interact with them that you are somebody who has that legal right to speak to them in English. And you do that through the same way that you can get your kids enrolled in English school. But you have to prove that to government every time, which is a huge burden. It basically empowers government officials to say, no, unfortunately, sir, ma'am, I cannot speak to you in English, even though just because you don't have that proof right now. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, and interesting not in a good way, in a very restrictive way in terms of services that Anglophones access from government.
And so who actually qualifies as a historic Anglophone, whatever that means? Like someone like myself who moved here from Ontario, that doesn't qualify?
First of all, it's a ridiculous thing that we're even having this discussion right now as to who qualifies as a historic Quebec Anglo and who doesn't. Because if you want government services in English because you're more comfortable, it's always been available. Now they're going to make you prove that every time. But in theory, the people who are eligible are people who went to school in English in Canada. So an immigrant wouldn't fall in that category. Someone like myself who went to French school in Quebec wouldn't fall in that category. I would have to have services by government, whatever the service, in French, and I couldn't ask for that service in English. So to me, that's probably the biggest thing that people will notice right off the bat. The enrollment cap at CEGEPS, so limiting CEGEPS to the amount of students that they currently have, will have an impact because CEGEPS are going to have hard decisions to make, and that could mean that the Campbell's Bay campus may not be high on the priority list for Heritage College if they can no longer expand on their number of students that they have.
And I know that there's been quite a bit of protest here in the last few weeks, people making sure that this is sort of at the top of the agenda here as far as attention goes. And there were some federal Liberal MPs that I think participated there in the march in Montreal. But even like, especially during the previous election, there was very, very little federal attention that was paid to this or very, very little opposition to this bill as well. So what do you think about the reactions of not just the Liberals, but all federal parties on this on this particular issue, since it does affect the Constitution?
Yeah, and I went to the protest in Montreal a few weeks ago, along with many of my own colleagues. And you're right; there were some federal Liberals that were present. I heard reaction from the Prime Minister today, saying that he would look at the bill and the latest iteration of the bill and look at what opportunities lay ahead in terms of legal challenges if it comes to that. But I think this bill will be challenged in court. It's going to be challenged by Quebecers. It's going to be challenged by Quebec groups. And that is where most likely the initial challenges are to come. And that probably is a good thing. It gives it more legitimacy if those challenges come from Quebecers instead of coming from the federal government. And I fully expect that many groups, some of which have already said they will challenge this. Now, the difficulty for them will be that the government, that the CAQ government, has draped this bill in the notwithstanding clause, making legal challenges a lot harder. So by doing that, it essentially says this bill, Bill 96, supersedes the Charter of Rights. Supersedes the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Therefore, it's going to be a lot harder for anybody who wants to challenge it in court to be able to successfully do that. I don't think it's going to stop people from challenging it, because it does affect their rights, and people will want to challenge it, but it's going to make it a lot tougher from a legal standpoint to win those cases.
For sure. You beat me to my next question there. I was just going to ask about what I guess, avenues do Quebecers here have to challenge this bill, especially given the difficulty of the notwithstanding clause. But, I mean, we've had a petition come out of the MRC Pontiac here. We've had a protest there in Montreal that attracted thousands of people. Didn't seem to move the scale at all. So what, I guess, options does the average Quebecer that's not a constitutional lawyer have to oppose this bill? What can they be doing?
Well, I think there's really two things left. You're right. There have been petitions, there have been protests, but government doesn't seem to have budged on its position, because it thinks that this bill is popular. It thinks that it can win them votes. It thinks that by pitting one Quebecer against the other, they can come out ahead electorally. So it hasn't had as much impact as it probably should have, all of those things. Now there's two things left. There's support, whether it's financial support, membership support, or just community support, to groups who may challenge this bill legally, and there will be probably community groups who will look into that. The other avenue that Quebecers will have is the electoral avenue. There is an election coming up this fall. Our party has already said that we would roll back a lot of the measures that are included in Bill 96, including the enrollment caps on CEGEP, including anything that potentially has to do with healthcare services, and a few other items that are particularly egregious to us. And so there will be an opportunity through the vote to tell this government, I don't agree with your bill. I don't agree with the way you're treating English-speaking Quebecers. I don't agree with what you've proposed here in this division, this rift that you've caused in Quebec society. And I want a lot of these measures to be scaled back, rolled back. And that is one of the items that I will present to Quebecers in or to Pontiacers in our upcoming campaign.
And I mean, this bill did play a role in the previous campaign there in what would that been 2018 there when because the CAQ did run on this issue and they won a resounding majority because of it. It seems like it does seem like it has a lot of support in Francophone areas. So what would you say for the Francophone listeners here? What exactly does the bill what advantages does it bring, or what possible benefits could it have for Francophone speakers? Or French speakers,
well, there's one big thing in the bill that is hurtful to Francophone Quebecers, and that is the ability to send your child or for yourself to attend an English language cégep. Like, I'll take my own example. I went to an English-speaking university because I wanted to improve my my language skills and to be able to perfect English. Other students may choose cégep as an avenue to do that. This bill will restrict Francophones' ability to attend English cégep. So it does circumvent rights and services to the English-speaking community, but the French-speaking community isn't immune to this bill either. It has some major repercussions for people in my situation who would want to attend higher education learning in their second language in Quebec.
All right, Andre, I want to thank you for your time. If there's anything else that we didn't touch on that you wanted to mention, I'll give you the last word here.
No, I think that's it. I think the bill in general reflects well the CAQ's way of thinking about the way we live together. It's obviously a way of thinking that isn't the Pontiac's way of thinking, where people are able to live side by side and sometimes, many times, side by side inside a particular house as a husband and wife, as mother, daughter, and this just isn't the way we view relationships between Francophones and Anglophones. Government thinks that it can use the English-speaking community as a bit of a political pawn ahead of the next election. I would suggest that Anglophones have a right to services in their language, and that's something that needs to be protected. And so that's something that I've taken great pride in defending as the MNA for Pontiac. I think it's anybody who is the representative of our community's job. And so even though this bill is passed, I don't think that my implications to fix a lot of the issues that this bill brings up is over by any stretch of the imagination.